Hello, listeners.
Hey, everybody.
It's another episode of the Board Game Brothers podcast. I'm Jeffrey Craig.
And I'm Matthew Craig.
We're brothers in real life.
And game designers in real life.
And this is our podcast where we talk about board games. And we have another regularly scheduled episode where we, the Board Game Brothers, are going to discuss a, drumroll please, board game.
Yeah, but first... I just want to confirm,
did you do a drumroll? Because I didn't. I was hoping the listener would...
Yeah,
we have no way of confirming that.
Confirm with us whether you did a drum roll.
Yeah, leave a comment.
Yes,
we'll tell you how in the mid episode breakdown.
Yes, but first we do have sort of a brief announcement of sorts. Yes. That after this episode, we will be going on a brief hiatus.
Yes, a brief hiatus. Probably no longer than a month, but we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I am to be wed.
Ta-da!
I may have mentioned my fiance on a previous episode, but yes, I am engaged to be married very soon, and so for that, we are going to take a brief hiatus, and then we'll be back later on for your regularly scheduled, well, I guess at that point it won't quite be so regularly scheduled, but your regularly scheduled episode of Board Game Bros, where we discuss a board game. So yes, that is the announcement. So I guess... keep an eye out on our socials for an announcement for when we come back from that hiatus.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So now let's get to the topic at hand, the board game which we are discussing. Matthew, what game are we talking about today?
We are talking about Ganshun Clever, otherwise known as That's Pretty Clever, designed by Wolfgang Warsch and published in 2018 by Schmidt Spiele.
All right. So I'm going to give a short description on what That's Pretty Clever is about. And then we'll talk more about the gameplay and the strategy in the game. And then later on, we are going to talk about the design. So, for a short description on That's Pretty Clever. That's Pretty Clever is a roll-and-write game for up to four players. In That's Pretty Clever, players take turns rolling dice and using them to fill out their sheet of paper in order to earn the most points. There are six dice, each of a different color, with five of the dice corresponding to the five scoring zones on your player sheet, and the sixth die being wild. On your turn, you roll all six dice and select one to score on your sheet in its corresponding zone. When you select a die, you must then place all dice that rolled lower than the selected die into the tray. I'll explain what that's for in a second. After you've scored three dice this way, or run out of dice to score, each other player gets to score one of the dice that have been placed in the tray. After four rounds have been completed, the player with the most points wins. That is four rounds in a four-player game. The game goes for more rounds in more players, or with fewer players.
Yeah,
sorry.
I believe two players it goes five, and one player it goes six.
Yes. That's four players... Yes, three players, it's still only a four-round game. But yes, with fewer than three players, you add more rounds.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, you can play one player because it's a roll-and-write game, which means, you know, you can just kind of play for your own enjoyment if you prefer. Okay, so that was a brief description on what That's Pretty Clever is about. So now let's go into greater detail on how to play That's Pretty Clever, and then talk about the strategies that we have devised when playing this game.
Yes.
So... first of all, I guess we should talk about the colors of the dice and the zones on the sheet that they correspond to.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll start in the top left, mm-hmm. where it is the yellow zone, which corresponds to the yellow die. There is a 4x3 grid on the yellow zone, and each space on that grid... it is 4x4. I'm mistaken. It's 4x3 in the blue zone. It is a 4x4 grid on the yellow zone. Each space in the grid has a number between 1 and 6 on it. It's the same for all players. When you select the yellow die, whatever number it has rolled, you check off that box on the grid. Now, there's more than 6 spaces, obviously, so a number of the numbers appear more than once. So if you roll a 1, there's 2 different ones you could check off. You choose one of them to check off when you select the yellow die. And then you will get a bonus every time you check off an entire row or column of the yellow grid. Each column will score you a number of points when you check it off. Each row will score you or gain you a different bonus. And we'll explain what those bonuses can look like in a little bit.
Yeah.
If you score the diagonal going from the top left to the bottom right, there's another bonus to the yellow zone, which is a plus one. And we'll explain what the plus one means in a second as well.
Mm-hmm. Next is the blue grid, which is a 4x3 grid. Though I believe the top row only has three spaces.
Correct. The top left is blank.
Yes. So the way the blue grid works is if you score the blue die, you combine the totals showing on the blue die and the white die, and you mark off the appropriate box in the blue area. So it goes from like 2 to 12. Those correct. Are the numbers on the spaces going from left to right, top to bottom. Mm-hmm. And so, like, if you roll a 5 on the blue and the white die is showing a 5, then that's a 10. If you roll a 1 on the white die and the blue is showing a 2, then that's a 3. So forth. And mm-hmm. once again, filling out columns gives you points. Or no, filling out columns and rows give you bonuses. The points are gained from having total number of squares filled out in the blue area.
Do you have the sheet in front of you right now?
No, but I can pull that up.
Okay, so there's a total of 11 boxes because it's a 3x4 grid, but the top left box is missing, obviously. So with 11 boxes, if you've checked all 11 boxes off, you earn 56 points. And then if you checked off 10, it's worth 46 points. If you only check one box off, it's only worth 1 point. So it spans from 1 to 56, and the more boxes you check off, the more points the next box is going to give you. We should have mentioned with the yellow space, this is something I actually forgot. The diagonal going from top right to bottom left is already checked off. So there's not actually 16 spaces to fill out. There's only 12.
Mm-hmm.
So same number of spaces as the blue. However, when you do fill out the all four columns, because that is how you earn points, is by filling out the columns, you get a total of 50 points. Yes. Sorry, 60 points. It's 60. It's actually the highest. No, actually, it's not the highest.
The highest.
But yeah, 60 points if you check all the yellow boxes off. It's 56 points if you manage to check all the blue boxes off. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Next, the green is zone. Green. Yes.
Yes. So the green zone has a number of boxes. I believe it's 10.
Oh, it's 11.
No, 11. Maybe they all have 11.
Nope, yellow has 12.
So green has 11 boxes. They are arranged from left to right, and the boxes have a number and a greater than or equal to symbol in them. So the first box is greater than or equal to 1, then 2, then 3, then 4, then 5, then it resets to 1, then 2, then 3, then 4, then 5, then the last box is greater than or equal to 6. So when you select a green die, it must be greater than or equal to whatever number is next to be checked off, and you check the boxes off from left to right. So the first green die you select to score in the green zone can be any number because it just has to be greater than or equal to 1, and that's all faces on a six-sided die. The next die, or the next space that you have to check off, it needs to be greater than or equal to 2, so you can no longer use a green 1 to score in that zone. All right, the orange zone has 11 boxes.
Oh, hold on. The amount of points you get from the green zone increases as you check in more boxes. If you fill in all 11, then you can get 66 points.
Yes. So yeah, 60 points from the yellow zone.
And there are bonuses peppered every now and then.
The orange boxes, so you can put any number you want into an orange box. There is no restriction on what numbers can be taken from the orange die when you place them in the orange box. Now, the fourth orange box, then the seventh orange box, then the ninth orange box, and then the final 11th orange box, they have multipliers in them. So when you write a number from an orange die in that box, you multiply it before you write it in. So for example, the first three spaces, you put whatever numbers you want in there, whatever you rolled, I should say. You put whatever you rolled in those boxes. Then the fourth space, when you score the orange die, you take whatever number you've scored and you multiply it. So if you scored a 6 on your fourth space for the orange zone, then you write a 12 in instead. And again, you go from left to right in this zone. And then the total number of points that you earn at the end of the game from the orange zone is just the sum of all of the numbers that you have written into the orange zone.
Right. And again, there are bonuses every so now and then. Mm-hmm. It appears after the third, or including the third space, the bonuses appear on spaces that do not have multipliers.
Yes.
The purple is the last row. Purple has 11 boxes again, but these have a greater than or a less than sign between them. And what this means is that the number that you place in the next box, so you place them left to right again, the number in the next box has to be greater than the previous number you placed. However, if the previous number was a 6, then you can put any number in the next box.
Right.
So you essentially reset whenever you get to 6.
Yeah, you place your numbers. They must be ascending. You can't place the same number twice in a row except for a 6.
And
when you get to a 6, then it's sort of like it resets.
Right. The number of points is equal to the total numbers in the purple zone added up. And there are bonuses. And there are bonuses starting with the third space and every space onwards. So it has the most bonuses.
So we've mentioned these bonuses. In the yellow and blue zone, you get them from filling out rows and sometimes columns. From the green zone, orange zone, and purple zone, as you place numbers into these boxes or check off the boxes from left to right, eventually you place a number in a box that has a bonus on it. So what these bonuses are, let's go over that. Occasionally, those bonuses will be something that you can place in another zone. So, for example, if you fill out the first row of the yellow zone, which takes 3 dice, specifically a 3, a 6, and a 5, after you've checked that row off, then you can see on the grid that next to that row, there is a blue X. And what that just means is that after you fill that row in, you get to immediately check off any box in the blue zone.
Yes. There's a similar... There's similar X's for the yellow and green as well, where if you get a yellow X bonus, then you fill out any box in the yellow. And if you get a green X, you fill out the next box in the green row.
Mm-hmm. Now, every zone, I think it's worth saying that not every zone has a bonus for every other zone. The blue and the purple zones have bonuses that apply to the rest of the zone. So, for example, the purple has a blue X, a yellow X, a green X, and an orange 6. But the green and orange and yellow zones don't have something for all the other zones. So it's not like if you fully invested in one zone, it will help the rest of them. It, in some cases, it will only help some.
Right.
So I mentioned an orange 6. So if you get an X, that means you check off a box. This only works in the yellow, green, and blue zones. If you get a 6, that means that you write a 6 into the next space on either the orange or the purple zone, whichever color the 6 is.
Yeah, it's color dependent. The purple bonuses are always 6s, but the yellow area has an orange 4 and the blue area has an orange 5.
True, yes.
So depending on which bonus you get for the orange, it might be different.
Yeah, the next space you write in whatever number it says. Okay, so there's 3 other kinds of bonuses that you get throughout the game, whether you're filling in parts of these zones, or there's even some bonuses you get just as the turns continue. So those bonuses are rerolls, plus ones, and foxes. So rerolls is a bonus. You have 2 trackers for the rerolls and plus ones at the top of your sheet. Every time you get a reroll bonus, you circle one of those spaces on the tracker, and then when you use it, you cross it off. Reroll just allows you to reroll all of the dice. So you can only use them on your turn when you've rolled the dice, and you must reroll all of the dice when you use a reroll bonus. And then plus one works a little differently. I'll let you handle the plus one.
Right. So the plus one allows you to reuse any die on the table. This means that in addition to the die that you've chosen for this round, you add another die to your grid from those available. This could be one that was in the tray. So like if the tray had a white, a blue, and an orange, and you chose the white, you could also use the orange or the white again. It can also be one that the turn player had rolled that that is not in the tray. So if the turn player drafted an orange die, then if you're not the turn player, you can reuse that. And similarly, if you are the turn player, you can reuse any of the dice that you've rolled, even the ones in the tray. So it's just from the dice visible on the table, use the value printed on it again.
Correct. Yes. Again, that lets you If it's your turn, you get like a fourth die for your turn. You can choose to use one of the ones in the tray or one of the ones on your sheet. If it's not your turn, you get a second die for the turn or an additional die for every plus one you use, because you can use multiple plus ones on your turn if you want, or on per turn. I shouldn't say on your turn, because you can use it when it's not your turn. But yeah, when it's not your turn, you can use another die in the tray or another die that the player, the active player, selected for themselves. And you can, it's you, like you said, you reuse the dice. So you could use a die for the turn and then select it again with a plus one and use it again.
Mm-hmm.
So the final bonus that you collect in this game, and it's sort of like the hardest bonus to collect. It always comes like in the latest part of any of the given trackers, or sort of towards the end, at least, is the fox. So for every fox that you've collected as a bonus throughout the game, at the end of the game, for each of those foxes, you score your lowest scoring region an additional time, your lowest scoring zone. So for example, if at the end of the game, you count out how many points each zone has earned you, and maybe you didn't put so many check marks in the blue zone, you've only done 5 check marks total, that's 11 points for each fox you scored from bonuses, you get an additional 11 points. So these encourage you, A, to invest in, you know, one particular zone until you get to the fox. And then they also encourage you to invest evenly in all of your zones, so that when you get to the end of the game and you're multiplying your lowest scoring region, your lowest scoring region isn't much lower than your next lowest scoring region, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The last thing to mention is that, again, like I kind of briefly touched on, at the beginning of each round, each player gets a bonus depending on what round it is. In a 3 or 4 player game. Oh, actually, so you get 5 turns in a 3-player game, now that we're looking at the sheet.
Yeah.
You get 6 turns in a 1 or 2 player game. Okay. So that's how it breaks down.
Yes.
So in a 4-player game, it's only 4 rounds. And then it's 5 rounds in a 3-player game, 6 in a 2 or 1 player game. Okay. So at the beginning of the first round, every player gets a reroll, so they get to circle one of their reroll spots. Then at the beginning of the second round, every player gets a plus one. At the beginning of the third round, every player gets another reroll. And then at the beginning of the fourth round, every player gets a choice of either checking off a box in a box that in a zone that uses check marks, or writing a 6 into a zone where you write in the numbers. So you can write a 6 into the orange or purple zones, or you can just cross off a box in the yellow, blue, or green zones.
Yes.
And then you cease to get any beginning of round bonuses if you're playing with fewer than 4 players and you have the bonus 5th or 6th round.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's pretty much the whole game. You just roll the dice. When it's your turn, select the dice. Oh, I guess we should elaborate a little more on the dice selection rules when it's your turn. So you start your turn with all 6 dice. You roll them. Then you select which die that you want to score first. And then once you've selected that die, you must immediately place all of the lower rolled dice into the tray. Now, you don't want to select a number that's too high or that there's too many lower rolls then, because if you run out of dice, then you don't get all 3 actions. Normally on your turn, if you play it correctly, you get to score 3 dice per turn. But if you mess up, like for example, if you chose a 5 as your first die and the rest of the dice are maybe all but one of the dice, maybe there's one other 6 or 5, but the rest are 4 or lower, all of them have to go in the tray, and then you're only left with like 1 or no dice. So in an early turn, like on the first die that you select, you generally want to choose one that's not going to put more than 2 or 3 dice into the tray. So maybe you roll like 2 1s, a 2, a 3, a 5, and a 6. You probably want to choose the 2. Because you're only giving up 2 1s. Those are going into the tray, and you still have 3 dice to work with for your remaining 2 actions. You could choose the 3. That would put the 1s and the 2 into the tray and leave you with the 5 and the 6. All that means is that for the rest of your turn, it's pretty restricted. Like, you have to use those 2 dice, and you have to choose the lower of the 2 on your next roll so that you still have the 3rd die on your final roll. So at that point, it comes up to like what exactly you're doing and how much value you can get out of the dice, whether you can take that risk for the bigger value immediately.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So now that we've explained what each zone is, yellow, blue, green, orange, and purple, and how to score points in each of those zones and gain bonuses in each of those zones, let's talk a little bit more about the strategy in this game.
Right, yes.
So I think I'll let you go first.
Yeah. So I wanted to just say off the bat that I feel like as the turn player, the sort of mindset is to try to grief the other players as much as you can. Usually that just means picking the best die for yourself. But also like playing around the white die is pretty big because mm-hmm. you kind of want to deny the other players the opportunity to do whatever they want. And so like oftentimes it seems like it's good to use the white die as like a lower number, even if there was a die of a similar, of the same zone you were going to do with like the same number. Because it denies the other players from using the white die.
Yeah, low numbers aren't great in this game. Certain dice are better at being a low number than other dice. The white die is especially potent, even if it's a low number. So mm-hmm. taking that on your turn, even when it's really low, is great for denying it from your opponents.
Yeah. I think... I just want to point out that the purple zone, again, has the most bonuses of any zone.
Yeah.
And so it is a pretty good one just over the course of the game. It's easy to forget because, like, it feels like the points don't have a lot of value. Just because, like, you know, oh, if you put a 3 in the purple zone, that's only 3 points. Whereas mm-hmm. putting something in, like, green could be, like, 5 or 6 points.
Right, the fourth die, It starts to be worth, like, 5 or more points.
But the fact that it builds into everything else, and mm-hmm. it also gives you, like, at most 2 +1s and 2 rerolls is very useful.
Yeah, so you're kind of touching on a strategy point that I wanted to make that also leads into another one. But the first strategy point that you're kind of leading into is that for a lot of these zones, it feels less important or less interesting to put numbers into them at the beginning of the game, especially small inconsequential numbers like green. Your first green die you use to put into the green zone only gives you 1 point, and that die could have technically been like a 6, so it doesn't feel valuable to like use a green 6 to check off the green box. And it probably isn't if it's your turn, and if it's not your turn, it's probably pretty rare that a green 6 ends up in the tray. But anyways, it just doesn't feel valuable. And similar to the purple zone, like if you want to reach the higher bonuses, it's better to put lower numbers in there at the beginning of the game, and that doesn't feel very valuable. And the orange zone also doesn't feel good to put low numbers in there. You'd rather put a high number in there. But you need to put points in all of the zones because A, you get the foxes if you get any foxes, you'll be happy you did, and B, like you start to get to the bonuses. But the most important thing to do is to put it into that first space. Like just getting the ball rolling is super important with each of these zones.
Yes.
So that's like my strategy tip number one, is just like bite the bullet and just check off a green box and throw a random number into orange and purple early on in the game, especially kind of lowish numbers, especially in the case of the purple zone, just so that you can get the ball rolling. It might feel way more interesting to get yellow things checked off or blue things checked off, but or like greed for a higher number in the orange zone. But if you just get the ball rolling, because you're not going to run out of spaces most likely in any of those zones, you're going to be glad you did, because of the foxes and because of the bonuses. And talking about the bonuses now, I want to talk about the importance of chaining bonuses.
Yes, going for combos.
Yes, because this is how you get the most value out of any given turn. Like, at the start of the game, it's going to feel like, oh, when it's not my turn, I just do one thing, and it doesn't give me a lot of points at all. But when it's my turn, I get to do 3 things. And that feels like it gives me a little more points. But eventually you get to a point where you get to do more than 3 things, even when it's not your turn, just because you manage to chain these bonuses together. So How about, Matthew, how about you give an example of what it could look like to chain some bonuses together?
Right. So let's say you just filled out the third row of the yellow box, which has 1, 2, and 4, and it gives you a green X. That green X could then fill out the fourth box of green, which gives you a +1. And then, say, you could use that +1 to copy, like, a 6 and put that in orange or purple, depending on what the color was.
Mm-hmm. And that 6 may even, if it was purple, that 6 could unlock another bonus.
Mm-hmm.
And so on and so forth. So yes, chaining these bonuses together makes your turns more valuable because you're taking more actions. And this is actually something we haven't talked about a lot on the podcast lately, but it was a major theme on some of our earlier episodes, is taking bonus turns is super strong. It's a super powerful thing in a game. That's why the most powerful magic card of all time, one of the most powerful magic cards of all time. One of the power 9 just says take an extra turn.
Mm-hmm.
Super valuable. To do that, and that's what you're doing when you're getting these bonuses. Now, in order to chain the bonuses, that means that your zones have to be one, or sometimes maybe two, moves away, but most of the time just one move away from getting one of these bonuses.
Mm-hmm.
In order to get to that point, in all of the zones, you need to have already made like two moves in that zone, at the least. Sometimes you need to have made three moves. In Orange's case, you need to have made four moves before you get a bonus that you can actually utilize that turn, because the first bonus is just a reroll, and a reroll doesn't really help you chain actions.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the third part of investing early on into all of the zones, is so that you get up to the point where you can make a big combination.
Right. I want to point out then that the earliest, or so... technically, the earliest +1 you could get is from blue, because that has 3 digits to get the +1, or 3 entries, 3 actions, you could say. But I think one of the easiest ones to get is green's +1, which is on its mm-hmm. 4th space. Blue, or purple has a +1 as its 5th space, but right before that is a blue X.
It's a yellow X. Oh, on purple, yes.
On purple. So, specifically, I want to point out this because blue is very hard to optimize, because it is your favorite 2d6 probability tables.
Mm-hmm.
And I always find myself specifically saving the blue X's for the 12, 2, 3, and 11. And it turns out the 12 is in the way for the blue +1 and the blue fox.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also a good target.
Yeah. Actually, never mind. Forget what I was about to say. But yes. There, and I think pointing out this very specific combination, like purple 4, which gives you a blue X, which you use to fill out the fourth column, which gives you a +1, which you can then use to gain another purple, which gives you then another +1, which you can then use to get a yellow X or something like that. This is especially good if you're gaining these +1s on a turn where there's a purple 6.
Mm-hmm.
I think chaining purple 6s is one of the most powerful things in the game that you can do, because usually it's on a space where you're getting, or you're deep enough into the purple zone that you're getting a bonus every space. So chaining these 6s is super nice. You do it as much as you can. You get a lot of +1s out of that turn, and then the next turn you get to start over at 1 and keep racking up these bonuses.
Yeah.
Chaining actions is good. You must invest in each of your spaces in order to get to those, or in each of your zones in order to get to those spaces where you are just one move away from getting like a big bonus that you can chain into another big bonus.
Right. I want to mention just sort of a sort of point baseline, I guess, is I want to look at how easy it is to get 20 points in each zone.
Okay.
Because I find that in a lot of our games, the foxes tend to multiply a zone that's worth 20 to 30 points. This could be different for different numbers of players and, of course, other play groups.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to look at this because I think it's kind of interesting that, so yellow, it only needs 3 dice to get 20 points, but that foregoes getting any bonuses. Mm-hmm. Blue, it takes 7 dice to get more than 20 points, which is a lot.
But you might acquire bonuses along the way.
Right. Green, it takes 6 dice to get 20 points, and that gives you 2 bonuses, both of mm-hmm. which are pretty strong. So purple and orange technically only need at least four, if they're all sixes. For purple, true, this coincides with the whole chaining six thing, and so I think it's always worth it to go for a purple six if it's available, because that means that you can get the points for it that much higher, that much quicker, along with getting to bonuses. But for orange, this is honestly even easier, because as someone who's been doing a lot of Sudoku, let me tell you that it's very easy to add three numbers to 10, and then a 5 or a 6 doubled is 10 or 12. Mm-hmm. So you have a lot of options to get that in four actions for orange as well.
If you're going, by the way, incrementally in purple, just 1, then 2, then 3, it takes 6 dice to get to 20 mm-hmm. or more.
Yep. It's true. But also, like, you want to put a lot of dice into purple anyways.
Sure.
Yeah. And in a similar sort of regard, I honestly kind of sometimes feel like it's kind of a waste to put dice into yellow. Because, like, there comes a point where the points you're getting from filling out a column in yellow almost are less than the points you would get from increasing, like, blue or green.
Yellow, so I think the thing that makes yellow appealing is that it's kind of an even distribution of randomness when it comes to placing the dice.
Yeah.
Whereas in purple, it gets harder to find the die you need. Same with green. In orange, you can place any die you want. So that's the easiest one to place dice in. However, orange, you want to pick a 6 when you get to one of those multiplier spaces, maybe a 5. And orange gives you the least number of bonuses, I guess, tied with green, technically.
Mm-hmm, tied with green.
Oh, I guess technically
yellow gives you 5.
5, just as much as orange. So yellow and orange, they're the easiest to place dice into, because their statistical distribution is an even 1 out of 6 to mm-hmm. find the number you need. And any number is, I guess orange is easier because there comes a point in yellow where you just need a 6 or a 5. And in orange, you can still just use whatever number you want. But anyways, yeah. I think that's just the appeal of yellow, is that it gives you a ton of points when you fill it out. The bonuses are decent, especially that +1 diagonal. And it's easy to place numbers in there, especially low numbers at the beginning of the game.
Right. Yellow is a good place to dump low numbers.
That's true. Yeah, I think that's the thing about yellow. That's why everybody seems to go for it. When we played, we noticed, like, lots of people go for yellow early game. That's because, like, it's your turn, you roll the dice, you roll a bunch of ones and twos, and you don't want to have to give up half of the dice or more on your first choice. So you just choose the yellow 1 or the yellow 2, because it feels like it does something more important than an orange 1 or a purple 1.
Right.
Let's see. I wanted to mention about the foxes real quick, or talk about the foxes real quick, because I think from our experiences, we've seen that it's better for you to have fewer foxes and a higher scoring low zone than to have more foxes and a lower scoring low zone. So I guess that's sort of, it's better to have 3 foxes and your lowest zone be 25 points versus having 4 foxes and your lowest scoring zone be 12 points.
So with that math, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I could do the math, you know, all day, but I'm thinking just to give, like, a rule of thumb. If you're saying, like, oh, I could just throw a 1 into the orange to get my 4th fox, or I could take a different action so that, like, it's raising my floor. It's raising the floor on my sheet. It's better to raise the floor than to go for another fox.
Right. I don't know. It's like, at that point, you kind of measure just, like, the amount of points you're getting from not going for the fox versus the amount of points you'd get from multiplying your lowest score again.
I'm just saying that in the games we played, the person who won did not have the most foxes.
Yeah. I think this is something I'd want to play more for. Even after the amount of times we played, I'm still not super satisfied with my take on foxes.
Okay. I'm just speaking from our experiences at this point. I mean, maybe if we figured out, like, how you get each of the foxes and whether getting to that point was worth it. I mean, if you've gotten all five foxes, that means that you've put a lot of numbers into purple, orange, and green, and you've checked off a number of spaces into blue and yellow. I guess the one place where the fox is questionable to go for is the yellow, because you need to check off a row to get the fox, but you only score points via the columns. So, like, by committing to the fox in the other four zones, you're gaining points as you go, just, like, circumstantially. But in yellow, you're not. You need to be, like, checking off columns as well.
Yeah. But that's true of, like, any bonus in yellow.
I'm just saying, like, if you're trying to get all five foxes, the reason why it may not work out in the end is because your yellow zone is being neglected.
Sure.
Like, but you have to put points into everything to get all five foxes. So that means you're not putting a bunch of numbers into yellow. You're not checking off a lot of yellow boxes if you're spending all those actions doing other things. And so by the time you've gotten all five foxes, if that was your goal, you've earned you've earned 7 points in blue. You've earned 28 points in green. It's hard to say how many orange or purple points, but the fox is so far down that it's probably over 20 points, maybe over 30 points at that point. But you've gotten 0 points in yellow. So all of your foxes are earning you 0 points. So,
well, that's if you get 0 points in yellow.
I'm just saying that in this situation, it's if you rushed to all five foxes. So that's why getting more foxes doesn't necessarily work. Like if you were to play to just get all five foxes, the foxes are worth 0 points. So
I would say three foxes is a very good target.
Mm-hmm.
Because that quadruples your lowest score. And it is hard for a single die to be worth 20 points.
Yeah.
And that's with the, like, the best lowest score in yellow, if you just mm-hmm. fill out the bottom row in the right column.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that about does it for strategy, though.
Let's see. Yeah, we talked about how good it is to play into the purple zone. I think I just want to mention, like, using how to use rerolls and plus ones
right.
a little more. So rerolls, they're very useful, but you shouldn't use them as a crutch. I've used rerolls as a crutch. For example, like it was my like last turn of the game, and I only had two dice that I was rolling, and it was like the green die and the purple die, and they both needed to be a high number. And so like I used all my rerolls to try to get that, but the rolls just didn't come. And then I only got to take two actions on my last turn of the game because my third action didn't come around because I was relying on my rerolls to give me the right number to put into green and purple. Whereas if I played my early turn, my first turn actions better, then I would have been left with more dice by the time I got to my third action and used all my rerolls, which would have given me a bigger probability of rolling something useful. So use your rerolls. Don't rely on them. Like if a bad roll means you don't get to take a turn or don't get to take your third action for a turn, then you don't want to end up in that situation. Use your rerolls instead to just make a passable turn slightly better. And if you're using your rerolls and you roll something usable, but you want to greed for something better, don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like if you have an orange die, and it's the only die you have left, and it's the last turn of the game, and you're trying to get a 6 to put on a multiplier space, but you end up rolling a 5, and you have like one or two rerolls left. I mean, this is just like probability, but it's better to not have to put yourself in that situation. It's better to not have put yourself in that situation.
Right. Rerolls are better when there's lower risk, essentially, because then the reward is better, but the failing isn't as bad as it could be. Because
mm-hmm.
the worst thing is to not take a turn.
Yes. So that's advice on rerolls. On plus ones, I would say two situations when you want to use a plus one. The first situation is if you are looking for like a very specific number and it happens on someone else's turn. Like if you're looking for a purple 6 to start resetting the purple zone, or you're looking for like a hard to score blue sum, like anywhere, you know, less than 4 or higher than 10, then it's okay to use the plus ones to get those. But an even better situation to use a plus one is when it will get you another plus one back. So like if you're on the fourth space of purple and you fill the next space in and you get a plus one, you just use your plus one, you get another plus one back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also do want to say, I think when the white die is either a 5 or a 6, that's another great time. Just because that fills in sort of like a square in green, orange, or purple that otherwise might not have gotten filled as easily. And it keeps up the amount of points you're getting because of that.
Yes.
Also, I do specifically want to say that I think it's nice to invest in the first 3 squares of orange early so that when the white die gets rolled as a 5 or a 6, you can use a +1 to get that multiplier.
Sure.
Just sort of guaranteeing that the high number is on the multiplier space.
I guess I'd also say it's good to use a +1 when you see like a pretty long chain available to you, just to kick that off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's about all I have for strategy discussion. So we came up with a good name for this section last episode. Do you remember what it was?
Was it the plug phase?
The plug phase?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that may be it. Okay, I still like it if that was it. It still sounds good to me. So we're going to enter the plug phase of our podcast, and we will see you on the other side where we will discuss the design of That's Pretty Clever.
Ganz schön clever.
All right, welcome to the plug phase. So here in the plug phase, we discuss plugs, and we will start by saying you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at BG Bros Cast. You can get updates on when our episodes go live. You can also hear about our hiatus that we're going on there, like we mentioned at the top of the episode. You could also just hit us up comments on our podcast on games that you'd like to hear us discuss. We'd love to hear from you guys. You can go to our website at bgbcast.com. That's where we have all of our episodes posted and cataloged. You can use our search bar function there to find episodes on the games that you'd like to hear our thoughts on that we have covered. If you don't see them, again, you can leave the comment on our socials. There's also a email form on our about page. You can leave suggestions there. If you have any interest in having us review your game, you can reach out to us through that contact form, again, on the about page on our website. And also on our website, you can find a link to our TeePublic store. That's teepublic.com/user/BGBcast, where we have merch with a very cool logo and branding on it. Check that out if you want to represent. That does it for BG Bros plugs, so let's hear from Matt plugs.
I stream on twitch.tv/twack. That's twitch.tv/twak. I stream on Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, from about 11 a.m. Central Time to 2 to 4 p.m. Central Time, give or take how I'm feeling. I stream a lot of roguelites, a lot of competitive games, been a lot of Teamfight Tactics since the new set came out, as well as a bit of Risk of Rain 2 with the expansion for that coming out. A little bit of platformers, some speedruns here and there. Every first stream of the week, I do the weekly Shonen Jump Jump, which is my mini review discussion corner for the manga in weekly Shonen Jump. So if you're into that, check that out. Always bring a little analytical edge to what I play and what I talk about. Also, I do another podcast called Net Surfer Pro, a whirlwind ride through the World Wide Web, where me and my co-host Galen discuss interesting media from the last 20 or so years. Our most recent episode was on the game SSX3, the snowboarding racing game.
But highly recommend.
Yes, but we also have talked about different types of music, movies, TV shows, video games, and internet subcultures and internet media. Our next is going to be over a video game that has been fairly popular since its release a few years ago. So check that out if you're interested in other sort of media analysis.
Dare we say the name of the game? I feel like I don't know what it's about, but I can only guess.
I mean, if
you... Oh, wait, no. Actually, I don't know, because I think you've already done an episode on the game that I'm probably guessing. Okay.
Interesting.
Well, I'll be interested to check that out. That's, again, yeah. Net Surfer Pro, Whirlwind Wide... Forget it.
Yeah. And if you are interested in figuring out what the next episode is, our Twitter at NetSurferPro has teasers in the form of little emoji riddles.
Yes. Check that out as well. And if you'd like to follow me on Twitter, you can follow me at Jeff Craig Designs. I mostly just like tweets that I find very funny.
And my Twitter is Matt Craig Gaming.
Yes. All right. That does it for the plug phase. So now we are untapping all of our note pads and
moving to the design phase.
Yes, the design discussion phase.
Yes.
All right, see you on the other side of this little musical cue. All right, here we are in the design phase. And yes, what do we have to talk about here? Because, this game, like, it took us a little bit to explain the game just because there's a lot of parts to it that need explaining. But all in all, it's a pretty simple game, and there isn't really much of a theme to it.
Right. I do want to bring up really quickly, this is, I want to say, the second Wolfgang Warsch game we've covered. And mm-hmm. it's the second one that has been mostly themeless and abstract, but with, like, a brief mention of an animal.
Yeah.
The other being the mind.
Right.
I just think that's kind of funny.
Yeah, the fox makes sense here because it's clever, which is a trait that foxes are known to exhibit.
Simile.
The rabbit I'm not so sure about in the mind.
Yeah, we're still not sure.
Yeah, and the ninja stars. Yeah.
Right.
But maybe that's just to make the game that much more mysterious, because that's kind of the vibe that game has.
This isn't an episode about the mind. We already did that.
Right, no, this is about That's Pretty Clever, yeah. which has basically no theme. And when I sat down to write my notes about this game, I didn't have much design notes to make, because, like, it seems like, they came up with some interesting ways to use the dice, and, you know, like, some of them are rows, some of them are grids. That's cool. They came up with some spaces to put bonuses on, and I'm assuming just through playtest, they figured out where all the bonuses should be and what they should do, just to make each zone kind of balanced in a or sort of relatively balanced from a surface level. So I guess one thing I just want to start with is that there is a decent amount of player expression in this game, like a surprising amount of player expression. Like, you'd think that a game about rolling dice, selecting one number and writing that number into a grid with no theme at all sounds kind of dry, especially when it comes to, like, deciding how you want to play the game versus your opponents. But this is something that all Roll and Write games, I believe, have to have, because, like, otherwise it feels like everyone's kind of just doing the same thing. So in this game, just the differentiation of the different color spaces and making you start from the beginning to decide, like, which one you want to play most of your dice into, that's the start of player expression. And then it adds on top of that with the plus one mechanic and how you use it, because different players might want to use their plus one in different ways.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have sort of a similar note, but in more of the form of breaking symmetry.
Okay.
In that, a lot of Roll and Write games, they kind of, so I actually think this game's implementation of Roll and Write's kind of interesting, but just sort of to quickly add on to what you said, that the sort of multiple choices act as a way to make players do different things, just as far as, like, making each player go for different strategies. It's not that it's forced, but that, like, that it encourages, or just, by having so many choices, it means that each player might find value in something else as far as what they think is the best choice. And mm-hmm. it is a form of player expression, and I never really thought about that. But, like,
So I admire the game for that. That, like, yeah, you get that moment to, like, set yourself apart from your opponents and put your mark on the game with, like, these, first that just initial very simple decision of, like, no, I'm gonna do yellow this time, or I'm gonna focus on orange this time. And then, yeah, how do you utilize your abilities? So I wanted to talk about the app really quick, but I'll give you a chance to bring up one of your points.
Yeah. So, this is what, the third sort of this game we've covered, because we did Cartographers and Welcome To. Mm-hmm. And so the way that this is the most different from those, other than using dice, because those use cards, is that That's Pretty Clever very specifically has choices that aren't available to every player. The other games we talk about how, like, they give you so many options, like I said, because each player ideally has a different one they think is correct, because you don't want players to tie. And so having little bits that break symmetry mean players won't tie, players have room for skill expression, players have chances to make cascading decisions.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, because of the fact that like the dice you choose are not necessarily available to the other players when you're the turn player, means that literally players will have different choices available to them, and the difference in point value or filling out certain parts of the grid aren't necessarily due to purely just a player having a different strategy, but also due to different roles.
Right.
And I'm kind of conflicted on this, because it feels like part of the appeal of these types of games is that players have sort of the same luck, but this is very clearly not the case. And it's hard for me to remove my biases from the other games we played where players have the exact same luck than this one, where like,
you know,
it almost it could feels just like, be... oh, it,
go ahead.
It almost feels like sort of a boss fight. Let me compare this to like a game like King of Tokyo, where one player is on the hill and the other players are not. In a way, it sort of feels like the turn player is attacking the other players by giving them very specific dice, you know, giving the other players your worst dice or your lowest dice or something.
Mm-hmm.
Which has this interesting dynamic where you're kind of waiting for the turn player to just take their turn and make decisions, and then you can make your decisions. But there's also this funny back and forth of like, ah, you gave me such bad scraps, or like, ah, as a turn player, I have to give them a really good die if I want to get one of my own really good dice.
It leads
to emotional moments.
That, yeah, I enjoy the interactivity of this game that is spawned from the asymmetry of it. Let's see. I wanted to say that this game does have a good amount of like luck mitigation to it to help, you know, the reroll and especially the plus one mechanics help to get around the fact that like one player might just have luckier rolls than the other players. So when that one player has those luckier rolls, if you have any plus ones, then you can steal them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You can, as the active player, you can choose to like, play a turn that's maybe slightly worse, but that's because it'll be even more worse for the opponent that may be in the lead and mm-hmm. that's been having the good roll. So like maybe you take the white die and the orange die for sure, because those can go anywhere, including the orange zone, which can have any number. So like you take both of those dies out of the equation, and then maybe you take the green die, and that just leaves like blue, yellow, and purple, which the active player or the player in the lead might not be able to do anything with if they're too low or not the right numbers.
Yeah. It's sort of a way of bringing direct player conflict into a game type that doesn't always have that.
Mm-hmm. And direct player conflict is a way of balancing the scales when one player is ahead.
Yes. I also did want to mention something about sort of the way bonuses are distributed and sort of a weird thing about visual design. So this is just something I noticed while looking at the board now, is that the boxes in yellow and blue are further apart than the boxes in the rows.
Okay.
And it might just be like, I'm not super sure why, but I think one thing this does mentally is it visually looks like the bonuses in orange and purple are sooner than the bonuses in yellow.
Mm.
Do you see that? Like if you were to look at the whole grid vertically, the bonuses in yellow are further to the right than even the earliest bonus in green, which takes four actions.
I see. So if you're just reading the page from left to right, the bonuses in yellow don't show up. Yeah.
Yeah. And right. I think what this does is it encourages players to take that first step in green, orange, and purple, even though that doesn't seem as useful. Because visually, you know, it gets them closer to a bonus.
I can kind of see that. But, I mean, the blue zone is all the way to the right. I think maybe the distance between the boxes is maybe more to hint at the order that you have to place them in, like because the boxes are so close together in the green, orange, and yellow or green, orange, and purple zones, it makes you think that they need to go in order versus they're so far apart in yellow and blue that you can start anywhere. You can place a check mark anywhere.
Right.
That would be my guess as to why that is the way it is. If it's not just like a spacing thing. Like, they just wanted everything to fill out the box visually.
Wacky
I think
box
there is
kerning.
I think there is a visual cue that exists to point players in the direction of how they should play, and that's that the fox is the only fox-shaped thing on the board. Like, everything is either a rounded rectangle, which is pretty much almost everything, except for the points and the fox. So the points are in, like, a sunburst. Obviously, that needs to stand out because that's the point of the game. But then the next thing that stands out is the fox, because it's got this really unique silhouette that only the fox has. Everything else is a rounded rectangle. So all the other bonuses, the sixes, the fours, the x's, all the spaces in any of the zones themselves are contained in a rounded rectangle. Everything's a rounded rectangle except for the fox. And the fox is red, which, you know, any Art 101 class will tell you is a color that stands out over all the other colors.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's very intentional. Obviously, that tells you, like, what the heck is a fox? Also, the fox doesn't have any mechanical explanation on the player's card itself. It's the only thing that's kind of unexplained on the card. So a player needs to go, like, hey, person who read the rules, what the heck does a fox mean? And then when you know, it's like, okay, the fox stood out. I asked what it was. It does this. That lets me know that I need to put something in all of the zones, or else the foxes are going to be useless.
Yeah.
And putting something in all of the zones early on, which is sort of more of the point that I was making, but still putting something in all the zones nonetheless, is like a key part of the strategy to this game, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. It's a good way of using rewards to sort of guide players towards the intended strategy.
So yeah, so if you have something like that in your game, make it red, make it interesting.
Mm-hmm. But also give it a unique silhouette.
I can appreciate that there's not a lot of feels bad moments in this game. If there are, it's usually due to your own fault, like choosing the wrong die and not leaving enough dice for yourself on your turn. And I think pretty much always you can use something that's in the middle of the board. There's a very rare occasions when, like, there isn't an orange or white die on the tray when it's not your turn that you can't use.
Yeah, I feel like the feels bad for me almost always come from the blue.
Yeah.
Because that's just the one that has the highest probability of not happening.
Personally, the blue zone, I just already know, like, due to the probability distribution that adding two dice together has, that it's going to be hard to get the 12 or the 2, so I don't like bank too much on it. The blue zone's usually my least important zone personally. That's like my own player expression coming into the strategy. I don't care that much about the blue zone. I do care about the green zone because it's one of the easiest plus ones to get, and the green zone I feel has even more feels bad moments to it, like when you get to the greater than or equal to 5 space that inhibits your progression to the next space. I think that feels slightly worse than the purple zone, which has a similar moment where you're like, you have a 5, you need a 6 in order to reset the less than the increasing counter back to 1. Because at least the purple zone, like, you'll always get a bonus when you do that. The green zone, I guess technically you do get a bonus after you reset it after the 5. Oh, no, you don't get a bonus. You don't get a bonus on the greater than or equal to 5 space. So, yeah, it feels worse there. When you're stuck there, it's only worth 5 points to go there, and yeah, it doesn't give you anything when you do. Mm-hmm. But you need to do it in order to get a little further down the green.
Yeah.
There's other things you can do in the game that are still worth points, so it's not like you just kind of have to wait for your opportunity, maybe save a plus 1 for it, which you've gotten a plus 1 when you've gotten to that point from the green row. So just use it to fix the green row, or go for a green check mark in a yellow zone or the blue zone by filling out a row or a column.
Yeah. My last point that I wanted to say is just that I like how blue and green have very slightly different but similar progression for their points. I don't remember the exact mathematical term, but it's like a sequence, and they're sequences you see a lot in board games, but you tend to see one or the other, and Wolfgang Warsch decided to use one of each.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the green one is 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 plus 5 plus 6 plus 7 plus 8, etc. The blue one
is 1 plus 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 plus 5.
Oh, is it just offset by one?
Yeah.
Oh, it just added a plus one instead of starting at one and then adding a plus two. Okay.
Yeah.
I see. The last thing I wanted to bring up is that there is an app version of this game. I think you can get it on mobile devices or on Steam that you can play solo. I'm sure you could play with other players if multiple people have copy, but I'm not actually sure. Don't quote me on that. I know you can play it by yourself. But one thing it does is it randomizes the board, and I just pulled that up to see what exactly that looked like because I haven't personally seen what that is. But not only do they randomizes the space of like the numbers on the yellow and blue grid, so it doesn't go in order anymore. They also sometimes repeat numbers on the blue grid. They also will randomize where the bonuses go. So the bonuses show up in different places, like the diagonal of the yellow zone that I'm looking in this example is a fox rather than a plus one. So I guess that adds some interesting replayability, although the replayability on this game is already really great because you can just try focusing on different zones or using different strategies and hoping that you come out on top in the end. But yeah, that's just a little nod to the app and that they mix it up a little bit because they can.
Yeah.
So that's cool. And I believe that's all I have to say on That's Pretty Clever.
Same for me.
All right. Thanks for listening to our episode discussing That's Pretty Clever. We will see you after our hiatus. Again, follow us on social media at Facebook and Twitter at BG Bros Cast to look out for that announcement when we are coming back, or just, you know, keep us in your feed and we'll pop up eventually.
And in the meanwhile, check out NetSurfer Pro.
Yes, check out NetSurfer Pro.
See ya.